the yogi moves upwards towards the realization of spiritual truths. So how he gets the Brahman realization we discussed. Now Krishna will start from the basic subject and will take upwards. So these are well-known verses. Let's read the translation 16th, we'll read the title 17th. 16th.
There is no possibility of one becoming a yogi, O Arjuna, if one eats too much or does not sleep enough.
Yeah. Go to the next one, we'll decide to discuss it together.
युक्ताहार विहारस्य विचेष्टस्य कर्मसु युक्तस्वप्नावबोधस्य योगो भवति दुःखः.
So all mental pains can be mitigated, dukkhah, by practice of yoga. The yoga is basically a spiritual practice, but for that spiritual practice to get the result, there has to be regulation at the material level. And that's what this is talking about. So now, Prabhupada translates vihar as entertainment. And Chakravarti Pada explains vihar to be walking. So for a yogi, there's no television or internet there for your entertainment. So for his only entertainment, his only side thing is, he goes around for a walk. That's vihar. And cheshtasya karmasu. Mitigate means to remove. Mitigate the miseries. Yeah. Mitigate all mental miseries. Yeah, and it is liberation. That's what we'll discuss further. Yeah, that's it. Correct. Now, sapna avabodhasya. So wakefulness and sleeping, that also has to be regulated. The Prabhupada in this in the previous report talked about the Goswamis, how they would sleep very little.
And
cheshtasya karmasu. So we have the idea that the yogi, you know, he has to complete abstinence. It's not like that. The yogi can also sleep. They're regulated. The yogi can also eat. But his eating is very regulated and very austere. But he eats also. Cheshtasya karmasu. Cheshta is endeavor. Chakravarti Pada explains this karmasu refers to that in the work that he is doing, either material activity or spiritual activity, whatever he is doing, he has to endeavor in a yukta way, in a balanced way, regulated way. Then he will be able to make spiritual advancement. Otherwise he will get, if yukta is not there, it will become something like atyahar or prayas, and then the balance will be lost. This is a basic stage. From this basic thing, next verse on onwards, Krishna starts talking about the advances.
Yeah.
Okay, the question is, how can this just balance lead to liberation? Actually, the balance is the foundation of the springboard by which the yoga process will act, and that will lead to liberation. See, yoga, this yukta has to be there, and then yogo bhavati dukkha. Then by the process of yoga, what will happen is bhavati will become, bhavati is future tense. That will happen, what will happen is dukkha. So when one is regulated at the material level and practices yoga, then one will get liberation. So now, from here onwards, Samadhi stage is described. So earlier it was basically Brahman realization, now Paramatma realization will be described.
Yada vinyatam chittam atmanyeva vatishthate vispruhat sarva kamebhyo yuktaityuchyate sada.
Well-established yoga, yukta-yukta yoga. Chakravarti Pada starts explaining that from this 18th verse onwards till verse 23 is a description of samadhi. So he is now vinyatam chittam, his mind has become regulated and he is situated in Atma and he is free from all material desires. So how does the realization, so how is his study situated in Atman neva vatishthate? That is illustrated through an example in the next verse. Go ahead.
As a lamp in a windless place does not waver, so the transcendentalist whose mind is controlled remains always steady in his meditation on the transcendental.
Yes. So, it's a nice example, a practical example for most people. It's nice that if the wind is there, the mind will wander. The plane will shake. If the wind is not there, the plane will stay unshaken. So, similarly, now what is the wind for the yogi? It is desires. The desires cause the mind to flicker. If there are desires, that means there is hope. I may get some pleasure here, I may get some pleasure there. Then the mind cannot stay fixed on the Atma. But if the desires are not there, then the mind will stay fixed. Next is a long series of verses, after which we will see one slide. Let's recite this verse now.
यत्रो परमते चित्तं निरुद्धं योगसेवया यत्र चैवात्मनात्मानं आत्मति पश्यति अत्यन्तिकं यत्तत्
Translation?
In the state of perception, Pranayama, or Samadhi, one has this complicated insight from the measures and their activities that are not the way. This perception is attached to my ability to see the world, to observe my mind, and to resist and resort to nature. In that world state, one is situated in boundless transcendental happiness, realized through transcendental nature, establishes that one never departs from the truth.
It is was directly from the Yoga Sutras, practically saying. So there are two kinds of samadhi. Samprajna samadhi and asamprajna samadhi. So, samprajna samadhi has two parts. Prabhupada mentions this briefly in his purport, but because the mention is brief, it's not so clear. So, Chakravarti Pada refers more to the Yoga Sutra and describes. Samprajna samadhi basically means that one is fixed, the mind is fixed. So, then there is an object for fixing the mind. For example, we should fix the mind on the tip of the nose. So when there is an object for fixing the mind, that means what? There is a consciousness and there is the object for consciousness. Then it is called as samprajna samadhi. So when there is no external object on which the mind is fixed. The mind is fixed, or not the mind, the soul itself. The soul is fixed in its own self-consciousness. That is called as asamprajna samadhi. Now, samprajna samadhi also has two categories, savitarka and svabhyasa. Savitarka means that there is some external object on which the mind is fixed. And svabhyasa means it is fixed on a thought. So generally, if any external support is required, that's considered a lower stage of samadhi. So even if it is a thought, fix the mind on a thought, that's considered lower. But just be self-conscious, self-fixed, that is considered a higher samadhi. Now why this is higher? Because at this stage, the yogi is not aware of anything transcendental. If one is fixing the mind on Krishna, Krishna's holiness, that is different. But when one is taking one material object or one material thought as a tool for focusing the mind, then how it is, if it, the object for fixing the mind is gross material object, then still there is gross consciousness. The subtle thought then it's better because it's subtle thought. It's subtle, like the consciousness is withdrawn to a certain material level. And if there is no thought at all, then it comes to the neutral level. Then beyond that is the positive level. So, at Savitarka and Savichar, one cannot pursue the Paramatma. After one comes to Asamprajnat Samadhi, then one starts perceiving the Paramatma. Prabhupada explained that Asamprajnat Samadhi will eventually lead to Sarupena Vastiti, which you quote in the purport. That one will constitute in Sarupa and one will be able to develop one's relationship with the Lord. These are different kinds of samadhi. Now let's go over this verse properly. So, first verse is Yatra Uparamate Chittam. Uparamate means complete stoppage. So the consciousness itself stops. This verse is talking about Asamparajnat Samadhi. There is no external consciousness. Yatra Uparamate Chittam. Niruddham. Niruddham means stop. Yoga Sevaya. All of you know those five stages which they talk about in yoga? Of the mind. Vikshipta, Vikshipta. Then there is Ekagrata, Vikshipta, Moodha, Ekagrata and Niruddha. So, these are the five stages. So, Shipta, Vikshipta and Moodha. So, Moodha is in Tamoguna. Completely the mind wandering here and there. Then Shipta means it is just wandering here and there. Moodha means, you know, it's like the mind is not active only, one is in a dream stage. Very lazy. Closed.
Go ahead.
Mood is the lowest, deluded. Then Kshipta is agitated. Vikshipta is distracted. Ekagrata is concentrated. Niruddha is controlled. The examples for each of them. Mood is deluded. Sleep, laziness, dullness. Mood. Kshipta is agitated. When it's stress or mania, the mind is going from one place to another. And Vikshipta, that is higher because one is trying to concentrate. It's distracted, but one is trying to concentrate. Example is, somebody is trying to hear a lecture in a noisy environment. Lot of distraction, and one is trying to concentrate. Ekagrata means that one is actually able to concentrate. In a study room, when somebody is seriously studying, or say, today evening because tomorrow is exam, so all of you will study. It will be Ekagrata. And then the Nirodha or Niruddha means conquered. The mind is completely controlled. So, that's actually the Samadhi stage. So, Patanjali describes that Moodha, Kshipta and Vikshipta are useless for practicing yoga. if the mind is in those stages, one just cannot practice any yoga. Yoga can begin at best as vikshipta, ideal only ekagrata. If my mood has shifted, then there is no hope of practicing yoga.
Niruddha.
So here what was the word? Yatro paramate chittam niruddham yoga sevaya. So one attains by the practice of yoga, yoga sevaya. Niruddham. One has come to the niruddha stage, completely conquered the mind. Controlled and disciplined. That means if one is sitting for yogasana, now if the mind is at shipta or vikshipta, he cannot go to samadhi. So then he has to do pranayama, he has to do asana, and basically he has to calm his mind down. You can also see that if our mind is too distracted, if you try to chant, you don't get any taste in chanting. Yes, one process is that you keep chanting and the mind will become calmer. But the point is that if the mind is very distracted, chanting, you can't connect with it. So something similar. Niruddham yoga sevaya yatra chaiva atman atmanam pashyan atmani tushyati. So pashyan is to see, atmani tushyati, the self becomes satisfied. Now how will the self become satisfied? He is seeing something, atmana atmanam. So Prabhupada explains that the mind is purified, sees the self. He sees the self and delights in the self. What is Prabhupada's translation there? And the ability to see the self by the pure mind and to relish and to rejoice in the self. So here is a few occasions where Prabhupada uses the self with a capital S. Prabhupada rarely uses, Mayavadi likes to use self with a capital S. S because?
Where?
It's not?
Okay. Your translation or the purport? Okay.
Word to word also? Word to word also it's not? There only? Okay. This is one of the editing steps. Yeah, there is not much of that. Because the devotees will be the editing first. They did not edit these things. So, of course, he is not going to do anything. The idea is that this can lead to confusion. But the Mayavadi has the idea that, you know, we are the small I, and God is the capital I. The small I and the capital I, they have to show the I. And the small I and the capital I. The small I will become the capital I. That is their idea. There is a lot of tantalizing word generally. So, yatra chaiva atmanatmanam pashyan atmani tushyati. Characterize one ability to see the self by the pure mind and to relish and rejoice in the self. Now Prabhupada uses an interesting phrase here, pure mind. Earlier what was described, if you see, one's mind is completely restrained from material mental activities. Uparamate chittam. So the soul is here. The soul is here, the mind is here, the body is here. The body has become motionless. That's how they go to samadhi, at the body level they become motionless. But now the mind has also become motionless. If the mind has become motionless, then how will he see? Actually the soul has its own self-consciousness. Normally the soul's self-consciousness is rooted through the mind into the body, into the external world. Like all of us are sitting now. So I am speaking, the soul is desiring to see, that consciousness is rooted through the mind into the body, the speech or the sound is coming out. But the body is motionless, the mind is also motionless. So then the soul alone is there. Now here, how is the soul able to perceive? So he described that the soul has its own subtle mind entering. So when he goes in the pure mind, the soul's mind. He purifies, he sees the soul's mind. and to relish and rejoice in the self. And after I describe, sukham astyantikam yattat, ultimate happiness, astyantikam. And how is that experience? Atindriyam, beyond the senses. The senses are already inactive. So how we explain the happiness? Buddhigrahayam. Buddhigrahayam means through the intelligence. So what is the intelligence? Again, this is also spiritual intelligence. So what is that spiritual intelligence? Yes, now I have the Dr. Ramadhyas. Now I can see my true nature. Now I can see the super soul. All analysis going on. Buddhigrahayam atindriyam. And that stage when one comes, vetti yatra na chaivayam taschalati. Once one is situated, one doesn't fall from this place. And it breaks from this situation. And at this stage, when he sees the super soul, then what happens? Yam labdhva cha param labham manyate na adhikam vataha. So Prabhupada often uses this word to talk about the realization of a devotee. Once a devotee attains Krishna consciousness, he says there is nothing higher than devotee. So now, that a significant word that is used here is manyate. He thinks that there is nothing higher. There is Bhagavan realization that is higher. And he is not about Bhagavan realization now. But he thinks there is nothing more worthy. Yam labdhva cha param labham manyate na adhikam vataha. And yasmin sthito, one is still like this, gurunapi vichalyate na. One is not the guru vichalyate. Dukhena gurunapi vichalyate. When a great misery comes, now what is this great misery? At this stage, he is doing his meditation, somebody comes from home and tells him, hey, your wife has passed away, your child has passed away. Not just, gurunapi na vichalyate. He is not disturbed. And then some vidya, when one has attained that stage, know this to be, freedom from misery completely. Yogam dukkha sangitam. Dukkha sanyonga yogam yoga. This is yoga, this is the perfection of yoga. Prabhupada goes into a technical analysis in this purport, which you can read yourself carefully. But Prabhupada talks about chit-shakti, and Prabhupada connects that chit-shakti with the internal potency by which you come to know the swarupa. Prabhupada also mentioned it, Samprangyat and Asamprangyat Samani. And then, in this part, in the yoga part, what is the distraction, temptation that comes in the advanced stages? Siddhis, isn't it? They get the various siddhis. And the siddhis, basically, they act as distractions. Because one will get the siddhi, but one will lose the Paramatma. If one wants the Paramatma, then one should not be distracted by the siddhi. And Prabhupada talks about gurunapi na vichalyate. He is careless towards incidental occurrences such as accidents, diseases, scarcity, and even the death of a most dear relative. But he is always alert to execute his duty in Krishna consciousness or bhakti yoga. So can you give an example of na vichalyate, a devotee not being disturbed by the death of a relative?
Srivastava
Thakur, yes, the son passed. You think? Father died, okay. Well, Modeta Vishchikapi Sarpahatya. Sadhur, so then actually when Prasadamara lamented ever. He lamented that his father had become a devotee. And he lamented his father was going to a terrible destination. But now that God is really lamented his father died. Father was killed by Hiranyakashipu. Garland, it's slightly different. Over there, but whether that you can call as gurunapi vichalyate, the great distress in the path of yoga, I don't think that you can qualify it over there like that. Surely a devotee has emotions towards everyone, no doubt about it. Yeah, that's an interesting example. He breaks down, and then she tells you this also has happened. Yeah. Well, if he's sitting for an individual, and he got the news that his mother passed away. And you shall know. I think that's how Maharaj gave the name Dhir Prashant. Actually, so, after describing the state of Samadhi of Krishna, comes back. We could go a lot into technicalities of this, but because this is overview, I don't want to go too much into that. And Prabhupada also doesn't go too much into the detail of yoga, because we will see that the flow, Krishna is taking Arjuna to higher stages. So now Krishna again comes back to the basic level and moves up from the basic level. Sanishchayena yoktavyo yogo nirvinna chetasa sankalpa prabhavan kama tva sarvana sheshataha manasairendriya gramam viyam yasamantataha.
One should engage oneself in the practice of yoga with determination and faith and not be ashamed of the past. One should abandon without exception all material desires or mental inclinations and thus control all the senses on all sides by the mind.
So, here is the first stage is that one has to give up desires. Viniyamya samantha from all sides. Actually, this itself is a tall order. But after one does that, how does one do that? That is Krishna says in the next verse. One needs conviction. Shanai shanai rupa rameni udhyadati gruhitaya atma samstham manah kritva nasinchitapi chintaye. This verse takes one level deeper. First is, the desires are going outwards, check the desire. The mind starts finding, bring the mind inwards and fix it on the self. So the question is, how do you do it? Shanai, shanai, gradually, step by step. Uparame, this uparame is the same word, yatra uparamate chittam, that came in the 19th verse. And nakinchitapi chintaye, don't think about anything else. So in the previous verse, he is saying that, control the senses on all sides by the mind. Other places they just said that control the senses on all sides by the mind. What does that mean? That the senses can go in different directions, the mind is alert. Okay, bring it back. But earlier it was said that tasmatam indriyanyadav niyamya bharadarshama. First control the senses and then the mind will come later. So which comes first? Do we control the senses? Control the senses first or do we control the mind first? Does the senses take us away toward Maya from Krishna, or does the mind take us away? Actually, it's both. It's like sometimes, you know, some thieves have a strategy to rob a person. There are two thieves, they're fighting with you. Arguing, fighting. And then the innocent person goes along and goes and asks them, why are they fighting? And both of them stop their fighting and start beating him. Boom, 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 boom. They beat him and they steal him and they go away. So, the mind and senses appear to be fighting with each other. Who is superior? But both of them, their goal is to steal from the soul only. So, how does it work? That sometimes the temptation comes externally to the senses. And if the temptation comes externally to the senses, from the senses the temptation goes to the mind. That's like there's a calm pool of water. Externally, a stone is thrown. Then there are ripples in the water. But at other times, when some past sanskara rises from the mind itself, for no reason, it starts getting agitated. It's like sometimes some bubbles start coming in the water without throwing any stone. So whichever way it happens, the temptations can come either from external source or from some internal cause. So both ways it might happen, and both ways the sadhana has to be prepared to fight it. And the safe thing is to keep the objects of temptation as far away from oneself as possible. If the objects of temptation are far away, then what happens? Generally the temptations won't come externally. And even if the temptations come up internally, then the fulfillment is not so easy. If the opportunity for gratifying one's senses is very easily available, then as soon as the temptation arises internally, Then the object is available, one goes and immediately enjoys. But if the object is far away, there are many obstacles in the object, in achieving that object for enjoyment, then that creates itself a safety. That's why Vedic culture there was separation between men and women. And that would protect people, usually. So, at our stage, in the Brahmachari Ashram, when we have respectful distance from the opposite sex, that protects us. So one way it protects us, we don't have much contact while being tempted externally. And also, even if we are tempted, then we don't have much scope. And that's also a protection. But, if you see, when you talk about Brahmacharya, Shravanam, what is that? Shravanam Kirtanam Keli, Prekshanam Uya Bhashanam, Sankalpa Adhyasayascha, Kriyani Vittarevacha. All of you know this verse. So there, the Sankalpa, here we talk about Sankalpa Prabhupada and Ramanda, Sankalpa. Sankalpa, strong desire comes up. So the first four are very subtle. Shravanam, one hears about women or sex life then. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Keli, Prekshanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam is there. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Keli, Prekshanam, Uyabhashanam. Okay. So one talks about it. Then that is Keli, one of the pastimes. Pastimes, one dallies with one for no reason. No, not for service, but just for some other purpose. Keli, Prekshanam, one glances and loves it. And Uyabhashanam, one chit chat, Prabhupada. That's gossip. Then what happens by that? So all these five activities, they will lead to sankalpa. And from sankalpa there is adhyavasaya. Adhyavasaya means endeavor. And finally kriyanurupa. This is the act of sexual engagement. So Srila Prabhupada explains in one letter that what is the role of intelligence? You know, the highest of Vishayana for that sloka is that Prabhupada analyzes that and explains that there are thoughts, there are emotions, there are intentions, and there are actions. Four things are there. Thoughts, from thought come emotions. You see, there's thought comes by thing. But thought itself is not dangerous. When you contemplate, then Dhyayato Vishayanam, another station here, emotions occur. That's fine. I want it. I want to enjoy it. So thought leads to emotions. And emotions lead to sankalpa, that emotion has come. And from emotions will come intention. That's adhyavasayascha. An intention comes up, yes, I want to do this. And then eventually the intention will lead to action. So Prabhupada says, we should use our intelligence to kill the thoughts before they become actions. You know, thoughts will come, but we can't avoid that. We are living in this world, and thoughts will come. But kill the thoughts before they become actions. And how do we kill the thought? Kill the thought by chanting the holy names, by higher intelligence, by understanding the consequences, all those things. But kill the thought before it grows into actions. And actually, even when it is at the level of intentions also, it can be killed. When it's decided to do something, but then one says, no, I don't want to do this. At that time also it's possible. But that time it's much, much more difficult. And it's like we have the chariot body analogy. So, if the horses are going on the road properly. And then the horse feels like, there's a fruit over there, I want to eat that. The horse starts moving on that side. The chariot is alert and pulls the reins back. Doesn't let the horse go there. Then it's easy, relatively easy. Although the horse is running, you pull it back. But as the horse gains more and more momentum, and starts going off the track, as it starts running faster, pulling it back will become more difficult. It requires more energy. Of course, even if he goes completely off the track, eats the fruit, and overturns the chariot in that process, still you can get up, turn the chariot, pick it up, and bring it back on the track and start. But it's much, much more troublesome. So, it is a waste of time, it is a further bad samskara which is there, we'll have to take. So, it's best if we can cut at the level of horses. That's why what is required is mental alertness. As we alert to, watch what thoughts are coming in the mind. And curb certain thoughts. Okay, Patanjali in the Yoga talks about Pratipaksha Bhavana. Pratipaksha Bhavana means substitute with the opposite thought. Whenever a thought comes, which is negative, then substitute with the opposite thought. So for example, thought of self-realization comes, we can substitute with thought of service. So basically, thought of Maya comes, substitute with thought of Krishna. Because, as you said, that just negating the thought is painful. It's difficult, it's painful. But pratipaksha bhavana means get the opposite form. So we are attracted to the beauty of the female form. We can have the lady's pictures, some pictures she likes very much, and substitute the form of the lady. That's pratipaksha bhavana. In the early days of his convent, Jagannath was first introduced in America. So the devotees, they were very spontaneous, innocent and spontaneous. So they all wear Jagannath locket. So they put Jagannath locket around their neck, long locket. And they would go out in the streets. And Prabhupada told them this prayer. They all memorized Jagannath Swami Naina Patagami Bhavati. So they would go out of the streets and they would see some mind.
They will play that. My dear Lord Jagannath, please appear in front of my eyes. I don't want this Maya in front of my eyes.
So, that is a very sweet, innocent example of Pratipaksha Bhavana. Pratipaksha Bhavana means substitution. Substitute a negative thought with a positive thought. So, it's best if we can stop at the level of thought itself. It goes to the level of emotion, then it's more difficult. If it goes to the level of intention, then it's even more difficult. The thoughts mean it's just entering the mind. It's entered our consciousness, entering the mind. The emotions mean it's completely entered the mind and the mind starts sensing it clearly. Intentions mean it has gone beyond the mind to the intelligence and the intelligence is the decision maker. It has gone almost connected through the intelligence. So at that time, it's difficult to go. So unless, of course, there are a lot of obstacles in between. So one is intending to a wrong activity, but the sense object is not easily available. So there are a lot of obstacles in between. And then during that time, somehow, the smriti comes back. It should not be removed. That way, we can be protected. So basically, the safe thing is to keep as much distance as possible between us and the sense object. Not have them easily available, so that the temptations don't come externally. And even if internally temptations come, we don't have the facility to act on those temptations. That way we are protected. That's why. So, Krishna said here, control the senses using the mind. That means don't let the senses go in the wrong direction with the mind. Fix the mind on the higher self, on the inner purpose of life. So this is something, this section, whole section is very useful for us to contemplate while doing japa. You know, how the mind went, yato yato nishyara, that verse will come next verse. Shanayi shanayi uparamya. So it is?
What is it saying over here?
Buddhya dhati guhitaya. So, intelligence sustained by conviction. Very significant phrase. See, all of us have intelligence. We get the intelligence by hearing the words of Guru Sabha Shastra. That is intelligence. It's not the information processing ability. Of the material scientists, the material scholars. That's useful, but what is the difference between that information processing ability and intelligence? Intelligence leads to discrimination. Information processing ability doesn't lead to discrimination. Remember a lot of things, we collect and speak, but intelligence means basically discriminatory ability. This is temporary, this is eternal. This material, this is spiritual. This is beneficial, this is harmful. So, that intelligence is further, so we get the intelligence by hearing Guru Sabha Shastra. And beyond that, dhruti gruhitaya. Gruhitaya means held on, sustained by dhruti, conviction. So, dhruti Prabhupada translates here as conviction. In the 18th chapter, the word dhruti is used to refer to determination. Dhruti in three modes, goodness, passion, ignorance. So, intelligence sustained by conviction or determination. Now, how does this conviction come? This conviction comes by hearing, this conviction comes by experience, this conviction comes by association, various ways. So, actually, earlier in the morning there was this question that without a higher taste, can somebody abstain from sense gratification? It is possible. Now there is rajogani determination and there is sattvagani determination. Rajogani determination is just based on raw willpower. So I will not do this because I don't want to do this. So raw willpower can last for some time. But what happens? The mind is very strong. And because the mind is very strong, sooner or later that raw willpower will be withered by the mind. That's why by raw willpower, one cannot sustain for a very long time. So Rajoguna determination means what? Now we say that Dhruva Maharaja determination was submission to Rajoguna. Of course he went to the Lord. There is no Rajoguna, he went to the Lord. By the determination he achieved the Lord. Because it was connected with Krishna, so it became spiritual. But Rajoguna determination, somebody will say, no, I will pass from this thing, I will do this, I will not do this. Like karma, he took a vow that till I don't enable Duryodhana to perform a yajna like Tarajasuya, till that time I made 3-4 vows. I will not sleep on a cozy bed, I will not eat something like sweet or something like that, and one more thing is it. And he actually followed it. But what was the idea? That you know, I want to prove that I am as good as Arjuna. Better than Arjuna. So the motive was material over there. So, when we talk about this determination in Rajoguna, it is based on raw willpower. Whereas determination in Sattvaguna is based, certainly willpower is required, but it is based on a scriptural reason and a scriptural process. Our willpower is coupled with a scriptural reason and a scriptural process. Then that willpower is sustainable. Like, many times people feel that if I have some bad breath, smoke, I think you are smoking whenever I want. Just whenever I want. But they want to give it up and they after some time they don't want to give it up. Or else the mind keeps changing. People say, I changed my mind. You didn't change your mind changed you.
So, what happens is that the mind is very, very powerful. We shall talk about that later.
In the just power that is required to give up a bad habit or to start some desirable behavior. Yes, willpower is important, but that alone is not enough. In the Bhagavatam, the fourth canto, just before Guru Maharaj passed time, he described that all the anarthas, they are real entities. You know, lust is not just a thought in the mind. You know, lust, anger, greed, they are real. They are like diseases of the mind. It's like they are diseases of the body. If I have indigestion, it's not just a matter of the mind. It's a real disease that is there. So if I desire, I have indigestion, I have willpower, I will cure my indigestion. If I have my willpower, I will not go into this company. Willpower. How much that willpower is going to lead to? Torture. Isn't it? First of all, there will be torture, and after that, there will be failure. So, willpower. You know, along with the willpower, we need a process, a medical process. So, when there is proper medical process, so the doctor will tell what? Okay, you have got indigestion, take only some soup or some light dish and take this medicine morning, afternoon. And the willpower is required to follow the doctor's prescription. If willpower is not there, then you will not follow that and the disease will never get cured. But if even if the willpower is there, by willpower alone was not sure. Just like Prabhupada says, Prabhupada will ask this question, you know, can scientists, by their scientific advancement, eventually realize spiritual truths? So Prabhupada said, it's like asking if a person is blind by cataract. By his endeavor, can he cure him? He says, not by his independent endeavor. His endeavor is required, but yes, his endeavor has to be coupled with a surgeon to remove the cataract. So like that. Endeavor, one cannot get go very far in spiritual realization. So willpower has to be coupled with the process. So in Rajoguna, there is only raw willpower. I want to show the world what all I can do. And therefore, I will do this, I will do that. In Sattvaguna, willpower is coupled with a scriptural process. So if the willpower is coupled with a scriptural process, then that combination becomes willpower. And that combination is something which can be implemented and it can become purified. So, buddhya dhruti dhrutitaya, the intelligence sustained by conviction. All of us will find that sometimes we hear classes, vehicles, associate with certain devotees, we get some conviction, we get some inspiration, we get some determination. So, actually, we should cherish that determination. You can write down in a diary, I'll keep reading it. Those moments of inspiration, moments of determination that we get, they are Krishna's gifts. And if we cherish them, then Krishna will do more and more of them. If you don't cherish them, then they will go away. And it's like bursts of spiritual energy that Krishna gives us. We have to capitalize them at that time. At a certain time in our spiritual life, we feel very high. Yes. confidence. Now I want to go on enthusiastic in my future. But after some time, we start going down, down, down. So at that time when we are going down, you know, this Mumbai, I think, or Purnima time, Bhakti Vishwa Madhav Maharaj gave a lecture. So in Bhagavatam classes, he said a very beautiful thing. He said, when the mind asks why, your diary should have the answer. He explained what he meant. He said, it's not that the mind creates new problems every day. The problems that the mind creates are all the same. Then one problem is last, another problem is relationship. Why does this person behave like this? Or other problem would be, you know, maybe a health. These are the common problems for you. Especially when there is a relationship, last, and health. Maybe service overload or something. But these are the and what happens every time when the problem comes, you know, we pray, we do some spiritual study, we consult some devotees, and we come out of the problem. But after coming out of the problem, we don't preserve the solution in a tangible way. Next time when the same problem comes, again we have to go through the same process. So what he was saying is, once you face a problem and overcome it, you write it down. So next time when the mind asks, why should I tolerate this person and he's behaving like this? We know as spiritual masters, there is no way lecture about tolerance, but they are all buried in some book somewhere. At that time to find it is very difficult. So if we have a diary where we write down how we solve the problems which our mind created for us, and if, when we face them, then that is a ready-made resource for us. But actually, we are, as Prabhupada would often say, that we are spiritual warriors. You know, we are fighting a war with Maya. So when the enemy attacks, you tell, wait, I have to go and get my weapon. Let me go and see my notebook, you know. I'll see what is the notes, philosophical point. The warrior has to carry his weapons with him. So that's why it's good to make elaborate notes, but to have some accessible notes, some important philosophical points, striking verses, some very significant quotations that we find, so to have them very readily accessible for us. Because our mind, in general, is very fickle. And it is remarkably forgetful of spiritually inspiring things. Extraordinarily forgetful. When we remember some class and we say, this is like life-changing for me. After I hear this, how can I again go back and become slack in my spiritual life? But what happens? We think it is life-changing, but our mind is memory-changing. And then we completely forget it. So sometimes we say, some of us may have seen how, I'm giving some examples, all of you can listen to them, saying, you see how Sok Krishna was helped in the final days by Maharaj, and how personally he was, what else do I have to do in my life? I can serve Prabhupada, I can serve my spiritual master. I don't have anything else to do in my life. But you know what happens? Those memories will come. And then, so many other thoughts, other priorities keep coming up. Therefore, it's very important, you know, that whenever the mind asks why, our diary should have an answer to that. So we have prepared the answer already, we have lured the answer also. After a lot of effort, we found the answer and we have lured it, but after that, we lost it. We preserve it, and internal struggle will always be there, we will become much lesser. Because we will have the resource to deal with that. So that is, buddhya dhriti grihitaya. Intelligence sustained by conviction. So, intelligence is what we hear from the spiritual master. But when we personally apply it in our life, and we see it work, then that means conviction. So intelligence sustained by conviction. By that word, slowly, surely, you can bring the mind under control. Atma samstam manaha tattva. Yato yato nishchalati manaschanchalam astiram atat sato iyam yaita atmanyeva vashamnaye. Translation. So here, God, Bhakti or Krishna is not talked about because Krishna is not introduced by the Lord here in the Bhagavad Gita till now. But then bring it under the control of the self, wherever and whenever the mind wanders. You know, this is the process in chanting also. So actually, when the mind wanders, the problem is that you also wander with it. You know that Tukara Maharaj story, you know, that he was asked, my mind wanders a lot, what should I do? Let the mind wander, why do you wander with it? You stay fixed and bring the mind back. But what happens? The mind wanders, you also wander with the mind. And the problem. Why we wind up? Because we still have that hope that the mind will offer us something new, something pleasurable. All of you have that example, Ishwar Krishna gives Kamsa Karika. There is a dancer. Dancer, she's dancing. And there's a spectator who is watching her. He's watching her. And he's watching on the dancer, not only a limited set ways of dancing. One, two dancers she knows. And after the dancers are over, she doesn't know anything. And all that she can do is just repeat those same dances again. But as soon as the spectator will understand that she's repeating the same dance, there's nothing to see. She'll start going away. But as soon as he starts going away, she doesn't want him to go away. She wants the spectator there. So what she does? She starts moving her hand slightly new way. Oh, some new dance is happening. And what happens? Start watching. But he doesn't know any new dance. So the little hand movements are there, again she gets back in the old dance. And he starts going up, she starts doing some new hand movements. But she again returns to the old dance only. So as soon as the spectator starts going away, she will start doing some new movements. So the only way the spectator can get out of the dance is Buddha is thinking there. Interest of saying that only. He doesn't know anything new.
He doesn't know anything new.
So, I don't have to be anyone. So, like that, Maya doesn't have anything more to offer than Ahar Nidra Vahane. But what happens is, Maya brings this in new forms, new shapes, new costumes, new colors. So, what happens is, once we experience something, not worth it. But then Maya will bring it in a new form. I have a new form. And that's how she keeps attracting us more and more. So with conviction that there is nothing new over here. There is nothing new in this world. When we are convinced in that way, then we can get rid of this infatuation of the sense objects. Buddha has a secret prayer. So now when one person succeeds in this, then what will happen? Then he is already inner perception. Then he describes it. ప్రశాంత మనసం హి ఏనం యోగినం సుఖముత్తమం ఉపైతి శాంత రజసం బ్రహ్మభుక్తమ కల్మషం. Prashant is coming for the third time, but this is already for level 8. Sukhamuttamam, in this way, the yogi has come to the Brahman realization. Brahma bhutam akalmasham. What has happened? All rajas has become. So it's not that he has become peaceful, rajoguna within his body has become peaceful. People may go to a peaceful place. In Kali Yuga, people like resorts. Either they go to a hill station or they go to some eco-friendly place, little. So peaceful. But they want a peaceful place and they want passionate pleasures. So they want satvaguni peace and rajaguni enjoyment. It is not possible. They are incompatible. So actually real peace will come when there is shanta rajasam. You have to pacify the rajaguna completely. Purify and pacify the rajaguna. Then they truly become peaceful. So, when we say Bhukti Mukti should become Chakale Ashantaka, Krishna Bhakta Nishkam Atayeva Shantaka. So, sometimes we say even Krishna Bhakta Ashantaka. There are so many responsibilities, so many anxieties. Our manager is here, you get along with anxieties he has. So, all of us will have anxieties. But actually, when we say Krishna Bhakta Nishkam Atayeva Shantaka, that is the Shanti which comes from freedom from Kamna. Freedom from the hankering for sense gratification. So the shanta rajasam is there. Therefore the devotee is internally peaceful. Although he may take an anxiety for serving Krishna, but the craving for sense gratification creates a constant agitation of the mind. And the devotee is free from that. Then he is describing the same realization in one more verse. Yujan evam sadatmanam yogi nigata kalmashaha sukhena brahma samsparsham atyantam sukhamashrute. phrase had come earlier, Yunjan evam Sadatmanam, in 6.6. There was yogi niyatamanam, it is yogi vigatakalmasha. And here what is happening? Very beautiful phrase. Brahma samsparsham. Sparsha is touch or contact. So he comes in touch with Brahma. Where does the word samsparsha come in the Bhagavad Gita? Famous word? Ekam sparsha cha bhoga. So, that is contact with the sense objects. Senses come in contact with sense objects. Here, the soul comes in contact with Brahma. Soul comes in contact with the spiritual reality. And that brings happiness. That is adi antavanta kaunteris atyantakam. Atyantaka sukha. So, this is these two verses are talking about Brahman realization, the next verse will talk about Paramatma realization, and the next two verses will talk about Bhagavan realization. Sarva bhutastham atmanam, sarva bhutani chatmani, ishvate yoga yuktatma, sarvatra samadarshanaha.
A true yogi observes me in all beings and also sees every being in me. Indeed, the self-realized person sees me, the same Supreme Lord, everywhere.
This is Paramatma realization. He sees me everywhere. It's not how he is. I'm sorry, there's no me in this verse. Prabhupada is putting that me in the translation. But at this stage, there is no me in the Sanskrit. Sarva bhutastham atmanam sarva bhutani tam ichyate yoga yukta atma sarvatra samadarshanaha. Where samadarshanaha earlier? Panditaha samadarshanaha. So same gender. So here what is happening? He sees super soul in the heart of all living beings. And at this level he is become Paramatma realized. He sees that the Paramatma is actually all living beings are in him because he sustains all this material world. And the world exists as his energy within him. So that means all living beings are within him. And he is within all living beings. And it's interesting, Krishna is using the word ikshate. Ikshate means see. Now earlier as we said, the material senses are all silenced. They are not used. But how is he seeing? He is seeing with spiritual senses. So this concept of spiritual senses may not be talked about explicitly in Patanjali Yoga Sutra. Or it may not be talked explicitly in the Bhagavad Gita also. But ikshate is a very important truth, this idea of seeing. So one is able to see God, one is able to see the highest spiritual truths. That is by a spiritual sense perception. So what is a spiritual sense perception? Just like the standard example of a television. Like one is watching a movie or one is watching a cricket match. And one has his own eyes, but the eyes become coupled with the camera that is watching that camera that is focused on the cricket ground. So what happens, we sit in our room and we are watching a cricket match. Then, wherever the camera moves, our eyes move over there. Although, our eyes have the faculty to see other things also. But, if one is focused, glued on the cricket match, then one eye follows wherever the TV monitor and the camera which is connected to the TV monitor, where is going. So like that, in the conditioned stage, the soul's perception is locked to the perception of the gross sensory organ. But when the soul becomes purified, then what happens? Then the soul's original spiritual perception awakens. That's showing one thing here. Our point of vision, long one, by matter matters. So this talks about how the perception takes place. All of you know what is near death experiences that we talk about in our discovery of the proof of the soul. So, there's one researcher, Kenneth Ring. He's written a book called Mindsight. Mindsight is NDEs of the blind people. So he says these people are blind since birth and they're incurably blind. But only when they have out of body, when they are unconscious, they have out of body experience, that is the only time they see. And they are able to see their doctor, the woman has diseases, her husband, children, she sees all the relatives. And they come back to consciousness and describe what this person looks like. He looks like this, she looks like this, he was doing this, and accurately they describe. So now, our current science is actually, if your optic nerve is damaged, if the optical center in the brain is damaged, or the retina or cornea is damaged, that is you can't see. But these people are able to see. What does that mean? That means the power of seeing is not coming from either, or the visual set of organs. It is rooted through this. So the soul and the subtle eye has the power to see. But because the sensory organ of sight is damaged, so it is not able to see. But when this out-of-body experience is, the sensory organ is decoupled from the soul and subtle body. The soul has come out of the out-of-body experience, then the soul has its original ability to see. That's how it is able to see. So this, let's switch over here. Yeah. This is normal vision. So how is the normal vision taking place? And the vision data comes in from the left side. And first we have the eyeballs. Then through the optic nerve it goes into the visual area of the brain. And beyond that, there is the antahkarana. Karana means sense. Antah means internal sense organ. So from the internal sense organ it goes to the soul. So normally how do we see? The atma, the antahkarana, and the gross sensory organ. All three are one line, we are able to see. So now this is normal vision. Now in OB or this, what happens? That the visual area of the soul along with the subtle body has actually come out of the gross sense. And that's why the vision is happening from the side. The visual area in the brain is not being used. That dysfunction is because the person is unconscious. There's direct perception happening. That's how a person can see, even though his eyes have always been dysfunctional closed. Now if you remove the second part of internal antahkarana, internal sense and atomic sense of vision, you remove that also. What will depend on the pure self. And a pure self can see directly the perception. Just like remove the camera from the ground, you remove the television screen, you look around. You can see the whole world around. So like that, the soul's spiritual vision is awakened. Ikshate yoga dharma is able to see spiritual reality of that. Sarvatra samadarshana. And next verse is what Prabhupada will quote very often. Yo mam pashyati sarvatra sarvam cha mai pashyati tasyaham na pranashyami sa cha me na pranashyati.
Yes.
So here Krishna is bringing the mom again for the first time over here. But he sees me everywhere and sees everything to me. So earlier Krishna also says, Tashadha Kvataha. The person is never disturbed. He doesn't go away from the truth. Same thing he is saying, but that truth is no longer abstract. It is very clear. He is never lost to me, I am never lost to him. So this is gradually ascending level of realization. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had this vision. He would see Krishna everywhere. Radha Rani has this vision, Krishna everywhere. And yes. Well, it depends on time, place, circumstance. Super soul is actually present in the heart. Mm-hmm. So if one is sufficient spiritually realized, one can perceive the super soul. That's one thing. Second thing is that when you say, like yesterday in the drama I've seen it, Krishna Graha Grahit Atma, Prahlad Maharaj. He was affected by Krishna Graha. He could not see anything else. So now what was he saying? Like I described in the lecture, when he would see a snake, he would think this is the bed of my Lord. So basically, when we see it's Krishna, it could be Krishna directly, it could be connection with Krishna. It could be both. In Mahaprabhu, most of the time, as I described in CC, you are seeing the connection with Krishna. You will see a tree, you will see a forest, something is filled out. But there are times when you will get direct Krishna on your mind. That's why we came to Kanai Nashala after Diksha from Shivarpuri. He said, I saw Krishna, and then Krishna disappeared. So that, at times you can see Krishna also. The point is, he is always Krishna conscious. That could be a direct vision of Krishna, or that could be with the consciousness connected with Krishna. So whenever Krishna is seen, we are discussing how he is seen. That was what we discussed in those slides. Sacha Mena Pranashyati. Now where does the word Pranashyati come? Name Vakta Pranashyati. So my devotee is never lost. So here it is saying that once you attain this level of realization, one is permanently fixed. Now interestingly, after this Krishna does something very remarkable. The next word.
Sarva-bhuta-sthitam yomam ajatte-katva-mahasitaha sarva-thavarta-mano-hi-sayogi-mai-vartate.
Because now, for the first time he has included him, mam, as not a tool, but as a goal. Earlier it will be yukta asita matpara anasanyami machitto. That was the yogi using bhakti as a tool to rise upwards. But here Krishna in 30 has introduced that realized yogi sees me everywhere. And the previous verse is, he sees that absolute, that truth everywhere. Sarabhutastam atmana. So Arjuna Vali comes to, is this a different thing or what is it? It makes it very clear. Sarva-bhuta-sthitam yo mam bhajati ekatvam-asthitaha. So that, Supasola was described in 29 and mam was described in 30. So you should understand that both are same only. Ekatvam-asthitaha, both of them are the same. So Krishna clarifies so that there is no confusion. And this is something which Krishna will do several times in the Bhagavad Gita, which can be a potential source of confusion. Krishna sometimes refers to himself in the third person. Third person means I, you and he. Sometimes Krishna will say, for example, in 18.66 is very clear, Sarva Dharmantaritya Mamekam Sharanam Gacha. But before that in 18.62 he says, Tam Eva Sharanam Gacha Sarva Bhavena Bhavena. Surrender to that Super Soul. Simply they just think, oh, this Super Soul is somebody different. But this Super Soul is not somebody different. But Krishna is not wanting to make everything I surrender. And also there is a difference of level of realization between Super Soul and himself. So this difference between first person reference of Krishna and third person reference is there in the Bhagavad Gita. We discuss it in several places. But there is clarification in the immediate context. There are a few verses ahead, a few verses behind. Krishna is saying that third person that was referred to, that was me only, that was somebody else. So here Krishna is clarifying this. So now, after Sir Yogi, Mayu Vartate, the person is always situated in me. And so that means he is the Ekatvam Asthitaha. Now, as you know, the impersonalists love this word Ekatvam. Ekatvam, oneness. But what is the oneness that he is talking about? That has to be carefully understood. Is Krishna saying that Yogi understands that he is one with all living beings? Not saying that. Sarva Bhuta Sthitam Yo Mam Bhajati Ekatvam Asthitaha. So, that Super Soul is situated in all hearts. And I, Ekatvamasi. So, oneness between me and the Super Soul in all hearts. One who sees that Yogi is always situated in me. So, by no translation can this refer to, and you are situated in all hearts, or we are all one who is situated in all hearts. It's very exclusive. Generally gives devotional transmission directly to make things clearer for us and to make things more irritating for the scholars. But here, now if you look at the Sarva Bhutastham Atmanam, this is an example of the word Atma meaning Paramatma. The word Atma is not the soul but here is the super soul. Because Sarva Bhutastham Atmanam, Sarva Bhutani Cha Atmani. So who is it that is situated in all souls? That is super soul. In all hearts, that is super soul. And now, after talking about this, so first he has clarified that the super soul and I are the same. Now Krishna does something even more surprising. He says, who is the highest yogi? So, Atma Pamyena Sarvatra Samam Pashyati Arjuna Sukham Vayadiva Dukham Yogi Paramomataha. So Atma itself, Upama is comparison.
The word Upama had come earlier in the 9th intervals. Yatra Uparamatno. Yatha Dipo Nivadasto. Nengate Sa Upama Saha. Upama. Mine was compared to the lamp over there. So here, you compare the Atma with whom? Atma Upamyena Sarvatra. It's everyone else. Compare your soul with everybody else. Samam Pashyati. One who sees equality. Now does this mean that, my Atma is the same as everybody's Atma? Is this the Mayavadi interpretation over here? Just look what Krishna says after that. He's saying, yes, my soul. One who sees one soul to be equal, he's saying Samam. He's not saying Ekam. The difference. Samam means similar. Ekam means one. So when he's comparing himself, so when he is comparing the super soul with the super soul in all heart with his himself, he is saying ekatva. But when he comes with your own soul with everybody else, it is not ekatva, it is samam. It's similar. And we are all similar because all souls are Sachitananda. Atma upamyena sarvatra samam pashyati. One who sees equality. And what equality? Or similarity or equality? Sukham vaya jivajukham. That what in their happiness and distress one who sees equality. So yogi paramo mataha, that is the topmost yogi. It's very interesting. He is saying that the topmost yogi is not just one who has seen me. That was described in 7.9, 29th verse. The topmost yogi is one who sees equality of all the beings in their happiness and distress. So Prabhupada explained that this means teaching. Because if the yogi has got the supreme happiness, then he understands. You know, just as I was unhappy with his materialistic life, and now I become supremely happy. So similarly, you feel that inequality. Then you start sharing the realization and the wisdom that he has got. So Prabhupada's whole purpose is about preaching. And so Krishna is not just saying a yogi who goes deep into samadhi and never comes out, he's a topmost yogi. You go deep into samadhi, you see the super soul, and you remember other people. They are also suffering like I was. And they can also become happy like I have. So Krishna is really amazing that he's talking about at the highest level of yoga realization, after attaining samadhi, you remember other people. And care for his people. So here Krishna concludes his teachings with respect to attaining samadhi. And not samadhi, but personal realization of the Lord. So should we have a break for 5 minutes and start? Or should we continue? So, now Arjuna has heard all this. Yeah, that's what Prabhupada explains. You know that means, Prabhupada explains that when I was, see Prabhupada's purpose. One who is Krishna conscious, he is perfect yogi. He is aware of everyone's happiness and distress by dint of his own personal experience. What is that experience? The cause of the distress of falling into is forgetfulness. And the cause of happiness is knowing Krishna. So that's what he means perfect yogi. And Prabhupada will quote 18.68, 69, 17. The preacher is most dear to me. 68, 69. So 69 quotes here. So, now, Arjuna has heard this whole process and in Arjuna did not ask a question for a long time now. The 28 verses of the last chapter and almost 32 verses of this chapter. So Arjuna just is hearing. But then, now he said, this is very complicated. So, and especially Chakravarti Bhava explains what strikes in it. This last one. Why do you could have asked the question after 25, after 26? But Krishna is again and again emphasizing Atma upamyena sarvatra samam pashyati. See all the beings equally. He says, how can I see Yudhishthir, my virtuous brother, and Duryodhana equally? You know, Yudhishthir, I want to shoot arrows at him. Yudhishthir, I'll offer obeisance. And even if I try to do some intellectual adjustment, try to see that won't last for long. Because their behavior is different. You know, Yudhishthira will behave in a way that attract my affection, and Duryodhana will behave in a way that attract my anger. So how can I behave in an equal way? So he says, actually, that this is not practical for me.
And why is it not practical? He says,
it is in place, it is organized like that.
He says, my mind is like, I can't see that. That's what he discovered. So, Arjuna Uvacha, Yoyam Yogasvaya Proktaha, Samyena Madhusudana, Etasyaham Napashyami, Shajjalatvasthitim Sriram. You told me to see all these things, but I can't see how I can practice this. So, chanchala is the main word over here. Chanchala, it is not sthir, it is chanchala. And to emphasize this further, Krishna takes the word chanchala and elaborates further. Chanchalam himana Krishna, mati palavadridham, asyaham shigraham manye, ayoyasu dushkaram. So, chanchala, his mind is restless, it doesn't stay fixed in one vision. So, he says, like, no, you can keep it fixed by your intellect. He says, no, it agitates very broadly. Pramati. He says, no, 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 actually, the intellect should control the mind. He says, no. Chakravarti Pada is the example which Prabhupada gives in the purport, that actually it is malavat. Normally, a medicine is supposed to cure an infection. But if the infection is very strong, the infection counters the effect of the medicine. So like that, the influence is supposed to curse the mind. But the mind is so powerful that it conquers and controls the influence. Prabhupada, in one letter to one devotee, right? And our problem is that we are supposed to use our influence to control the enjoying mentality. But our problem is that we are used to enjoying influence. We are used to enjoying influence. We are influence to plan how to enjoy. So, mallava. And then finally, this. No, if you apply the energy, you'll be able to do it. Okay? The intelligence is like a tiny needle. And the mind is like a big block of iron. How can I elude here to block? Not possible. Dridham, very strong. Asyaham nigraham manye. I think it's not possible. Vayor iva sulushkaram. Sulushkaram. Very, very difficult. So we have had many classes on this. Four qualities of the mind. And we are all familiar with them. So, Prabhupada quotes this missionary analogy of the chariot body. And Prabhupada says that Krishna consciousness only way to do it. And interestingly, there's one scholar who says that Bhaktivedanta Swami misrepresents Krishna. He says that Krishna actually that this yoga process is rejected in the Bhagavad Gita. And he quotes Krishna for this. Yoyam Yogasya Proktana, Chanchala Himana Krishna. And he says, actually, if you read Krishna's response, Krishna does not reject this process. Krishna tells Arjuna to still follow that process. So Bhaktivedanta Swami is misrepresenting Krishna way. But actually, what Krishna is telling is, you have to follow the right process. We read the translation. Krishna tells, what Krishna tells is, not that you follow this process, but follow the right process. First verse, you will tell him that, yes, it's difficult to control, but it's possible to follow the right process. Second verse, you will tell, without the right process, it is impossible to do. Now, what is the right process? Is it yoga itself? He doesn't mention that at all. And actually, if we go forward, what comes up is yoginama sarvasya. More importantly, the only one place, dushkaram is difficult. In 7.4 King, Krishna will say sulabham. So what is sulabham? Always thinking of ananya cheta sattam yomam smarjan. Pasyaham sulabha partha nitti pasya yoginaha. So that sulabham is the answer to dushkaram. Yes, yoga process is very difficult. But always fixing the mind on the easy. So what Srila Prabhupada does is, Srila Prabhupada gives us the later sections earlier. And if you do not see the later sections carefully, it might appear as if things are being misrepresented. They are not misrepresented. So our Shivaram Maharaj has written an elaborate book called the Bhaktivedanta Purport, where he defends Prabhupada and Prabhupada's way of presentation from all these criticisms of the scholars. But what happens? In general, if Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita had not been very famous, nobody would have noticed it. But Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita became very famous and influential. And people's lives started to be transformed. Then it created insecurity in people. and they start targeting. Because what happens if you criticize some ordinary book, there is nobody will notice it. You criticize a well-known book and you get noticed. So there was a Pugendra Sinha. He wrote a book called Bhagavad Gita As It Was.
So just to play around it, I don't refute so
much. So Shurava, how much fascism in that book? He doesn't take his name directly. Initially he takes his name. But argument is systematic fascism. So here what we are doing, nobody knows. Only very few people know about it. Sorry?
Yes, Shurava is ascended. I don't know if the Maharaj is there, probably might have done that also.
So what we are doing in this case is, we are doing both these things. See, we are saying, let us follow the literal flow of the Gita. As Karma Yoga is Karma Yoga, let us follow that also. And through that also we will come to Bhakti Yoga. And parallelly we are also seeing how Prabhupada started studying Karma Yoga as Bhakti Yoga also justified. So we are taking both approaches. Even if you don't accept this translation, we will tell you why these translations are justified. And even if you say this translation is not justified, we will say, yes, by the flow of the Bhagavad Gita, the Bhakti conclusion is justified. So both ways we can take. And both ways, that's what we are doing now in our translation, in our study. So let's move forward. Let's see Krishna's reply. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Asamshayam Mahabaho Mano Durnigraham Chalam Abhyasena Sukham Teya Vairagyena Cha Gruyate. So he's saying two things. Yes, it's not all difficult. So Garuda Prabhu, one of Prabhupada's disciples, has written a book called, it's an English poetic rendition of the Bhagavad Gita. It's called it The Beloved Lord's Secret Love Song. So Bhagavad is translated as the Beloved Lord. And Gita is Secret Love Song. Because the Bhagavad Gita is a very abstract philosophical book. But in the sense that actually it is a book with a message of love. It's a love song. And then there one of the things that he does is he analyzes the tone of Krishna in different ways. Because most of the time the philosophy itself is so heavy that what is the mood of the person speaking the philosophy is not clear. So I have a PowerPoint on that. How many of you seen that? When the Krishna's mood in the Gita? And we will see one of these days. So he says, you know, Krishna is sometimes sympathetic, sometimes affectionate, sometimes angry, sometimes irritated. So these different emotions come out when Krishna is speaking. So here Krishna is sympathetic. Yes, Maharaj. There's no doubt that it is difficult to control. You know, generally somebody says, I have this problem, I'm not able to wake up in the morning. You're lazy.
Yeah,
I also had that problem, you know. But then it's difficult to wake up. It's sympathetic. It's sympathetic.
So if Krishna is sympathizing with us,
yes, it's difficult to control.
For the Supreme Lord, nothing is difficult.
Krishna is being sympathetic over. Recognizing it. For Arjuna, it will be difficult. For all of us, it is super difficult. Asamshayam Mahabhav.
Generally, Krishna uses Asamshayam. If you practice bhakti, you will come back to me. But here, Krishna uses Asamshayam. Yes, mind control is difficult.
No doubt it is difficult. Mano Surnigraham Chalam. So, Krishna is, Arjuna said, Tasyaham Nigraham Manne. So, he is using adding over to it. Durnigraham. It's not possible. It's very difficult to manage. But, it's possible. Why? Abhyasena to kaunte vairagya jagruyate. So now what is this abhyasa and vairagya? Actually these two words are introduced by Krishna for the abhyasa for the first time in the Bhagavad Gita. This word has not come before. Has vairagya come earlier? Vairagya was not come till now from what I remember. So the practice and detachment. So what is this practice and detachment? That means that one has to keep applying oneself to the process. And detachment means everything that will distract one from that process, one has to detach from that. Just stick in the process. So Krishna doesn't elaborate these two words much here. He will elaborate later. Abhyas will come in the 8th chapter once again. And it will keep coming again and again in the future. But he said, by practice and by detachment it's possible to control. And Prabhupada explains practice and detachment. Just like if you are diseased, you have to keep taking the medicine and avoid the formidable foods. Then you will get cured. Keep taking the medicine, chanting Hare Krishna, and avoid breaking the liver like that. And then the next verse, Krishna further sympathizes with Arjuna. He says,
असंयतात्मना योगो निष्प्रापैति नैमतिः वश्यात्मना यतता शक्यो वाप्तुम् उपायतः. He's talking very personal tone. You ask me, it's very difficult. I tell you, yes, it is difficult if you don't know the right process. Ishpra, almost impossible. But if you follow the right process, it's possible. So, again, we discussed earlier, raw willpower is not enough to control the mind. Raw willpower is not enough, you need a process. It's like if a room is dark, you know, hey, you darkness, get out of here. I'll curse you, I'll kick you, I'll beat you. None of that will work. I'll scream at you. What is the process? Turn on the light. So like that, for controlling the mind, there is a process. And if you don't follow the process, you just make us a miserable, you torture us. So Krishna is acknowledging that. Now he's not immediately telling what is the process. Or he's not reassured. Okay, you are saying that if one strives is possible, it may take a long time. I have only not attained that success. The first is that it seems so difficult that you can't try it only. Second is, even if we try it, one may not be successful. So what happens to such a person? That he asks 3 verses of this question. These 3 verses are the longest question that Arjuna asks. After his first chapter speech, another long speech comes in the 11th chapter. They are describing the Vishwarupa. But he asks 1 or 2 verses question. 2 verse question was in the 3rd chapter, and 1 verse question was in the 5th chapter. Now it's a 3 verse question over here. So let's see what is the question. And each of the lines has one specific emphasis in it. Arjuna vacha ayati shraddhayo peto yogachalita manasah apraapya yoga samsiddhim pramgatim krishna gachyati. Arjuna is asking, chalita manasaha, because the mind is very restless, so what may happen is, one starts the process, but the mind becomes chanchala, chalita, becomes distracted, and one is not able to continue the process. Then he is not able to attain perfection. Then what is going to happen? Now, the answer to this question is related to 2.41, Deha Vikramanashus, 2.41. But Arjuna is clarifying for our sake, ayatihi. One who is unsuccessful. So yatihi means renunciate. Ayatihi means one who is not able to renounce. Tam latim Krishna. What is the definition of Krishna? Then he further, to illustrate the gravity of that problem, gives the example. What is the example? Kachinno bhaya vibhrashtar chinnabhramiva nashyati aprakrishto mahabaho mudo brahmanapati. So, all of the problems in the clouds are moving very fast, and sometimes a part of a cloud gets separated. It has to go to another part, because otherwise it's just all alone, it's blown away by the clouds. This cloud example is given in another place in the Bhagavatam by Devahuti. It comes twice. Devahuti is it one? Another section of it comes that how the cloud is moved by the wind. Like that, all living beings are moved by time towards death. So, the cloud appears to be so big, and wind appears to be invisible. But the invisible wind moves the cloud. So like that, all of us appear healthy, strong, young, but time is moving us. In this verse. They say like that, the cloud is moving. But if a small piece of a small part of the cloud gets separated, then it will just be tossed about by the wind. It will be helpless. So it's like one cloud is the materialistic people, another cloud is the devotees. And Arjuna
Krishna told that these two are different people. Tani Shasaro Bhutana, the Syam Jagatani. The two consciousness are differentiated between the two. So now you have to go from here to here. But of what if one does not reach here, and then reach from here to there, what will happen? So will he be apratishtho? Apratishtho means without any support, is there in this direction or in that direction? Prabhupada also, his mood is similar to that of that person. There are two ways to progress. One that this progress, that material progress is no progress. There are materialists also and there are spiritualists also. They are more interested in material development, the economic, material advancement, economic development, etc. Yes. Etanne samshayam Krishna tumatasya sheshatah tadanya samshayasyasya shittanaya upapadyate. So why, but for you, nobody can destroy the doubt? That is based on Krishna's answer in 4.5. Many births we have gone, but I remember all of them, you have forgotten. So because you know what is going to happen, what happened in the past life, what is going to happen in the future, therefore, you can tell me. And apart from you, nobody else can tell this answer. So then, this is my doubt, and only you can answer it. So, generally speaking, whenever an answer is to be given, then we also have to understand the mood of the person. Mood of the person, and then answer. If you don't understand the mood, somebody asks, you know, you say that Lord Chaitanya is Krishna only, but you know, Krishna, everybody knows Krishna is Bhagavan Bhagavata, but Lord Chaitanya, he is very few people know about him, and how Krishna Lord Chaitanya is God? Vayu Puran says, anybody who sees any difference between Chaitanya Chandra and Krishna Chandra, he will burn the fires of Kumbhika for 10 million years. So this is a genuine doubt, and if you impose an answer like that, what happens? Yad gatvan anivartate. That person will go. So when a person is expressing a genuine doubt, it's very simple to understand. Yes. Reasonable doubt. And then you get answer. So here what does Krishna do? Krishna, Arjuna is expressing anxiety. So first Krishna does not give an answer. Krishna is a reassurance. Krishna's personal mood coming up. Krishna does not give a detail of what happened. Actually, a transcendentalist will never meet with an auspiciousness, Arjuna. That's an assurance. And then he describes how he will not meet with an assurance with any destruction. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Partha Naideha Namutra Vinashas Tatya Vidyate Nahi Kalyana Kruttasche Durgatin Tata Gacchati. Word, tath. Tath is old, yes. Right. Is that word tath come anywhere else before or earlier? So, okay, it's very affectionate. And I'll find out. Mangala only somewhere it came. Okay, fine. So he says, oh Tat, oh dear Arjuna, what will happen? Iha and Amutra. In this life or the next life, there will be no destruction. Vinashasatya. Not only will be no destruction, there will not even be Durgati. So there will be no destruction and no bad destination also. Nahi Kalyana Kutkashit, Kalyana Kut. One is engaged in auspicious work. So many people take this verse out of context and they say, one who does auspicious work never leads to destruction. And their idea of auspicious work is social service, humanitarian work. So, you know, sometimes people want to quote from the Bhagavad Gita. Nahi kalyana kutkashit durgatin dhatach. They quote this verse. So, the kalyana krut is something very different. Now, Prabhupada interestingly explains, kalyana krut means all transcendentalists are kalyana krut. Whether it's jnana yogi, the Ashtanga Yogi, all of them are on the transcendental class, so they are all on the categorized as Kalyan. So, towards the end of the purport, Prabhupada says that the only auspicious activities are those which lead one to liberation. Before that, because in the fruitive activities, even if they go to higher standards, like even if they go to higher planets, but still because they are not free from material existence, they are not following the truly auspicious path. So, now among many auspicious paths, Krishna consciousness is the supremely auspicious path. All that Harena Mastikam. Mangala Dhyopi Mangalam. Pavanam Pavanam Dhyopi. Most purifying among all purifying. Most auspicious among all auspicious. So he says, anybody who is going for this material world is inauspicious, because in the case of birth, old age, disease and death. So anybody who is aspiring for any higher, he will never meet with destruction. And then Krishna will start explaining how this happens.
Prapunyakrutan lokan shitva shaswati samaha shuchinam shrimatam yehe loko krishno vijayate.
Yes. So, this is the first case as you know. Somebody who made a little advancement, that means he still has a lot of material desires. So, because of those material desires, he gives up his spiritual practice. Then he will go to heavens. And heavens will get profuse enjoyment. And then he will come back to this world in a place where he can relatively easily practice spiritual life. Shishinam or Shimatami. And other alternative, he describes somebody who made a lot of spiritual advancement. And then he gets destroyed.
Athava yogina eva kule bhavati dhimatam etat durlabhataram
sukhinimatisham. The path of rapid advancement. Kalyana Kut. So, rapid advancement is rapidly going back to spiritual, leaving the material world far behind. So this can happen by all three processes.
Ashtanga Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Bhakti Yoga.
Now what about Nishkam Karma Yoga? Nishkam Karma Yoga also will lead to one of these three processes later. So in that sense, Krishna is telling that somebody is making this rapid spiritual advancement. And what does he do? He leaves it. Then where will he go? So if he has made a lot of advancement, that is correct, in 42, that he will be born a devotee's family. Now, these two alternatives don't exhaust all the possibilities. Why? Because, you know, like yesterday I was telling, that currently society is going this way. You know, we are all going straight to hell. Rapid way down. So much degradation is there. So, this is the way to hell of the, these are the weak karmis. Generally in the scriptures use the word karmi, it's often similar to karma kandis. When we use the karmi, word karmi, technically it is the karmis. So, now what Krishna is talking about is something special. If somebody who was doing this chooses to go here, and then after going here, he comes back here. So after going a little bit over here, if he goes, comes back, it will be 2.41. So not 2.6.41. And if he goes from here and comes back here, that is 6.42. But in our situation, you know, this path is actually non-existent. So if a person falls, he'll fall directly from here to here. So this possibility is also there. So if this happens, then what happens? Somebody falls back. Now, away from the varnashram duties, back into sinful life. Then,
when such a thing happens, then a person, the laws of material nature will act. And the person will have to take a birth accordingly. So Prabhupada will quote that verse later, Aho Bharata Shubhachoto Gariyan. You know that verse. How amazing is it that those who are born in dog eaters' families, they are chanting the holy names. So now the way Kunti Maharaj name, this verse comes from Devahuti's prayers. The way Devahuti is quoting it, how amazing it is that these people are chanting the holy names, and the very fact that they are chanting the holy names means that they put tapas the jhus of Snuralaya. They have already practiced Brahmacharya, they already done tapasya, they already waited in the holy places, they already done all these things. But then the question arises that if they have done all these things, then why are they born in the dog eater's family? Isn't it? So, why are they born in the dog eater's family? Neither on the transitional path, but while being on the transitional path, they fell to a terrible sinful activity. And when they fell to sinful activity, a sinful reaction comes. The sinful reaction comes as a low birth. But there are two different principles now. The karma acts at the level of the body and bhakti is at the level of the soul. So the bhakti is not lost. And because the bhakti is not lost, so although they are born in the dogmatic family, they don't have the consciousness of ordinary dogmatics. The consciousness is of devotee. So Prabhupada also gives the example of Jalbharat in his purport. Now we see, normally we say that if somebody even just eats prasad once, that person will never get a subhuman life. On Jalbharat probably, he probably ate prasad throughout his life. Not only that, he renounced the world and went to the jungle. And still he got animal soul. So how is that? Actually, the material laws will. The material law is that whatever we remember at the time of death, we'll get that. So he was attached to a deer, he remembered a deer, and he got a deer's body. But the bhakti principles also act. And what happened? Although physically he had a deer's body, he did not have a deer's consciousness. He had a consciousness of a very advanced devotee. So, like Krishnanda was telling a few years ago, when they had gone for yatra, you know, one of the young small girl, a 10th level, she was haunted by a ghost. And then the ghost was not going well, and they tried different things. And finally this Matani spoke in a male voice suddenly. I said, don't try to drive me away, I want to go to Mayapur. When I reach Mayapur, then I will leave. Don't try to drive me away, till then I am going to stay here. And they were shocked. That actually, till that in Mayapur she was behaving very strangely. And then when they came to Mayapur, the ghost went away. So then, Krishna was discussing, then he talked to Krishna devotees also. So telling that actually, it has happened sometimes in the history of ISKCON, that even some devotees might commit suicide. If a devotee commits suicide, the normal material laws will act. The devotee may get a ghostly world. But it is a special ghost. The ghost wants to go to Mayapur. So, the consciousness of a devotee, the bhakti stays, but the laws of material nature act. That's why our Jnanananda Maharaj has written a book called Animals in Krishna Consciousness. Yesterday only, that book is there, and that book, English book is out of print, but Vishnu has printed a Marathi book, so that Marathi book is there in Lakshmanaya book. It's there, you can read it. Krishna Bhavana Bhavi Janvara. So, it's a fascinating book about how different places, for example, Malaysia. Now every evening, for Gaur Aarti, this dog would come and just stand out. And he would be taking darshan. And there were five dogs near the temple. Only dog was considered very unclean. So they would try to drive him away. He would not bark. So just, if they try to drive him, he would move away. And he would be still at a distance. Every day, weeks, months, he went there. And then one day they found that dog was there. And then when they inquired, they found that the dog had left his body. So, there are many stories there, very amazing stories. So now we say in the animal body, you cannot practice spiritual life. Yes, what it means is you cannot start spiritual life. You started, you can continue. So, these two attitudes Krishna talks about, because for Arjuna, vikarma is not an option at all. So when Krishna is saying yoga charita manasa, that means what? He came from the karmakanda path,
from the path of material fruitive activity, rujas fruitive activity, he left that path and came to the path of spirituality, of fixing on oneself on a spiritual goal. So when he falls back, he falls from this level to this level. So then these two options are there, these two things may happen. But there are other possibilities also. And for us, we have to understand that it's quite unlikely that we see many devotees also, especially if they fall off and if they don't have a proper social security system around them, they go back to a terrible sinful life. Because they feel, I missed out so much in my life, let me enjoy all of it now. So that's why these verses are reassuring in one sense, but at the same time they are sobering. So Prabhupada would often say that, you know, don't wait for a future life. Try to complete your business in this life itself. Now, another very interesting point in this purport is, Prabhupada in the second, he gives the example of Bharat, Arachi. You know, second is this, Etad Durlabhatara. So he was born in a saintly Brahmana family. And interestingly, in the first he is giving his own example. The first is, in a yogi who is slightly deviated, a person who is slightly deviated, he gives his own example. So, Prabhupada asked in different times, Tamala Vishnamadhan wrote a letter to Prabhupada. They would always ask in an official way, Prabhupada, does the spiritual master know his previous lives? That means, do you know your previous life? It is like that. They would ask. So, Tamala Vishnamadhan said, you know, Prabhupada replied, it was a stern but clear reply, long reply letter. Prabhupada says that, you know, I don't know why you ask this question. He says that when a person becomes a millionaire, he can give charity to a poor person. Now, you don't, the poor person doesn't have to bother whether the millionaire becomes a millionaire by birth or by acquiring property, whichever way. So he says that the spiritual master can always help a disciple to make spiritual advancement. And Prabhupada did not imply take that discussion much further. Now that once he told Bhavananda Prabhu that I was there in the spiritual world and Krishna told me to go to this material world and write some books. So that's one answer that Prabhupada gave. So Prabhupada gave different answers at different times. And I think, this is often a topic for devotional speculation. What is Prabhupada's Swarup in the spiritual world? What is Prabhupada's previous life? Now Prabhupada did not encourage it. But Prabhupada is illustrating a principle over it. So even if from the material point of view you want to see, Prabhupada's birth was not ordinary. Prabhupada is putting himself in a Srimatamge. Prabhupada was not born in a Brahminical family, Brahmana family, but he was in a businessman family. And he said, we never had any shortage. Not that they were very opulent, but they never had any shortage. And of course Prabhupada dedicates Krishna book to his father and he said, the father who was a pure devotee. For Prabhupada to give a tribute like that is extraordinary. So he gives his own example and he gives the example of Sutra Master, who is also born in the exalted family. Prabhupada is putting himself in 42. So, advanced devotee. So, that's why Prabhupada's father was a businessman externally, but Prabhupada said that business was just a side activity for him. His real activity was devotional service. And Prabhupada said, every morning I would wake up to the sound of bells ringing. You know, my father would be doing RP and I would wake up and go and see what is exertion. So like that. So Prabhupada is putting himself in this category of advanced devotee. Now Prabhupada, so I asked Janivas for this question. He gave me a very fascinating answer. He said, Prabhupada could have been here for many lifetimes. You know, Krishna told him to come to this world, but that's why he has several lifetimes, you know. And in his previous lifetime, he might have been somebody in this world, and then he's born in the world. Basically, don't speculate about this. Don't speculate about this. But Prabhupada is illustrating this principle. Even if somebody doesn't accept him as a liberated soul who has come from the spiritual world, as a Nitya Parshad, still, if you look at it from a Shastri point of view, Prabhupada's birth is certainly characteristic of a very advanced devotee. Born in the devotee's family. So in that sense, Prabhupada is exemplifying what the scripture is teaching over here through his own life. He's giving his own example for that.
well, what does that refer to?
Go to this slide. Where is Sarvant of Sarvant? Okay. Yeah, I'll find it in the name actually.
So, Trayate Mahato Bhayat primarily means not that the devotee will not lose the human form. He will not lose the human consciousness. So the human consciousness, the bhakti consciousness, that will not be lost. But the form that we get depends on the laws of karma. And unless the devotee is very advanced, the laws of karma may not be exempt, he may not be exempt from the laws of karma. So when we say Neha Vikrama Ashutya, what is not lost? What is it that is not lost? Actually, we can see that even a devotee can fall down, as you rightly said. Even an advanced devotee can fall down. But when an advanced devotee falls down, why does he fall down? Because the free will is always there. And the free will can be misused. But if a devotee falls away and then he returns back to Krishna's lotus feet, then whatever attraction to Krishna he had cultivated, that will start manifesting very quickly. That's why we see some people. They start practicing bhakti and then they are so determined, so realized, so advanced. How is that? That is because of the birth in a particular family, temporarily their bhakti smriti, their remembrance of bhakti was covered. But as soon as they come in contact with devotees, it's all uncovered. And if they are at 30%, 60%, then that going to 30% or 60% is very bad. Because they are just reclaiming what was theirs. And their struggle starts thereafter. So, that means when one goes from one birth to another, there is a temporary coverage, there is a temporary forgetfulness. But, as soon as one comes in contact with the bhakta, that temporary covering is quickly removed. And one actually is seen at his advanced spiritual station. And that's why sometimes we can clearly see in our devotee circles also, some boys just come and they become so advanced so fast. Even some of them say, God brothers, we say them and they are equals, but they are more advanced than us. And it's not that they are struggling as much as they are struggling. Of course, they also have their struggles, but the struggles which we have, those struggles they don't have. They are effortless, they are struggling at some other level. They are able to take so much responsibility, their minds are so peaceful. How is it all that happens? That happens because there has been advancement in the previous life. Now then our mind is, I told this to one devotee, he said, oh, why do you blame me then? They are so advanced because they are not struggling. I mean, because they don't have to struggle. Because I have to struggle so much, so I can't be so advanced. No, the point is that they are so advanced because they struggled in the previous life. So without the struggle, one has no advancement. So if we struggle, we will also make advancement. So there is no escape from the struggle. But the fact is that the transition from one body to another, it brings about a temporary forgetfulness. And the next body that a person gets may be troublesome. It's like there are many stories of some devotee couples getting a sickly child or a child who lives for a very short time. But in that short time, the child lives remarkably. There was a story in Back to Godhead of a girl who lived only for 3 years. Maybe 4 or 5 years or something like that. And during those 4 or 5 years, she was so small, but she was preaching. 3-year-old, 4-year-old, she would preach to other children. And then at the age of 5, she left her body. This is really extraordinary. Very fixed in emotion. So, on material point of view, what kind of God is this? There are devotees, and their child is dying like this. But actually, what is happening is the soul is very advanced, but has a little remaining in bhakti, Kali bhakti to complete. So, it's born over here. And so, just complete his bhakti and goes. That also happens. Okay. So that the child will be born sickly sometimes. So that last karma has to be exhausted. This is what Maharaj told Vishwarup Prabhu. I think I told that story. Vishwarup Prabhu was born very sickly. So Maharaj told that actually you have the opportunity to service to a very advanced. And the soul cannot do any further karma because the body that she has is so sickly. So now we can live for long. But you can help in the final transition. So that can happen. So that what may appear materially inauspicious, a sickly body for the child and a sickly child for the parent, it may actually just be the last stage, the last lap in the marathon of going back to spiritual life. It's a multi-life marathon also. Let's move forward.
Okay, where are we?
तत्र तम बुद्धि संयोगं लभते पौर्वदेहिकं यतते चितो भूयः संसिद्धो पूर्णनन्दनः सो बुद्धि संयोगं Prabhupada translates buddhi as, buddhi samyoga as revival of consciousness. Why? The consciousness is always there, but that spiritual buddhi that was acquired, it comes back. And labhate. Now how do they get it? From the purva deha. What was developed in the purva deha? It comes back again. And yet the thing, one starts endeavoring once again. That coming may take some time. It may require some stimulus. It may require some years. You don't know how long that will take. But once it comes, one starts moving forward. And Krishna describes the next verse. How this comes, buddhi samyogam. Purvabhyasena senaiva riyate yavashopitaha jijyasurapi yogasya shabda brahmati vartate. The word abhyas comes over here, past abhyas, practice. Riyate is attraction. And what kind of attraction? Avasha, helpless attraction. So one is spontaneously attracted, like Radha Mara says in his book also, I didn't want to hurt my parents, but there is just no alternative for me. That early first print of the book was The Journey Home, somebody might ask, so why I was doing such severe austerities? You know, fasting so much, just taking one carrot for a month. But at that time, I felt as if these were not my decisions. I was being led by a higher power. It just left me with no choice. Now, of course, he's just putting, you can say that he's putting out of humility, that he's not talking about his determination. His determination is surely there in it. But it's also really spontaneously attracted. So that spontaneous attraction comes because it was developed in the previous life. And Shabda Brahma Ati Varsate. Shabda Brahma is what here? You have Shabda Brahma go here. So this comes in the Bhagavad Gita. Where Shabda Brahma refers to the Vedic literature with their rituals. So normally people have to do the Vedic rituals for many lifetimes and then after long time they will develop the attraction. But Ati Varsate has gone beyond that. It's not necessary that he rejects the Vedic rituals. But he doesn't have to follow all of them to gradually develop attraction. He's already beyond that. And here Prabhupada quotes Ahobhattasutra. So, Prabhupada uses the word disregard of Vedic rituals. Why disregard of Vedic rituals? Because actually the purpose of the Vedic rituals is understood and fulfilled for them. Yavan Artho the Pandya, that was also there. The one translation of that verse is, I think Chakravarti Pad does a translation very interesting. Yavan artha udapani. I was in the 2.46 verse. So, sarvataha samplutodaki. So he says, if water is available everywhere, not just a river, sarvataha, sarvataha means in all directions, samplutodaki. Udaki is water. So, if water is flowing everywhere, what need is there for a well? So that translation he uses, not Chakravarti Pad, one of the Sri Acharya, he uses the translation that. That this advanced spiritualist has as much need for the Vedic ritual as the ordinary person has need for wealth, then water is flowing everywhere.
And the poetic person says, there is no need. And if water is there everywhere, what is the need?
So like that, for him the purpose of the Vedas is fulfilled, because the purpose of the Vedas is to develop attraction to Krishna. And so he has no need for the rituals. And then last verse you will describe, in this section, what will happen. Prayatna yatamanastu yogi samshuddha kilvishah anek janma samsiddha sato yati param gatim. Quite sober here. Already one verse is over, suddenly one eighth janma further also will be required.
So,
going back to the spiritual world is not so easy. By Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Prabhupada's mercy, it is easy. It is admittedly easy. But prayatna, the endeavor, yatamanas to, for renunciation again. And gradually it becomes purified. So, actually, the determination, once one gets a higher taste, then the struggle is not so much. Even if one has to go through many lifetimes, the struggle is not as great as in the lower taste of putting us down. To yati parangati. Now still, because Krishna has not introduced himself, he is not talking yet. He has come back to me explicitly. That is talk only once in the fourth chapter, 4.9. What is that parangati? That we will describe later. That is bhasya desuru shankuna pavakala. In chapter 8, chapter 4, that parangati. Now, after describing not here, the second question of Arjuna's answer. I know Krishna is in general confusion this whole chapter. So, he said, earlier he said, who is the topmost yogi? One who is seeing the similarity of himself with all other living beings. And he continues that thread of thought over here. So, what is the thread of thought? Who is the topmost yogi? The first he glorifies the yogi itself. The yogi is greater than all the transcendent beings. Tapasvidhyodhiko yogi yamidhyopimatodhikah karmidhyaschadhiko yogi tasmah yogi bhavarjuna.
The yogi is greater than the ascetic, greater than the empiricist, greater than the preacher. Therefore, poor Arjuna is all
sense of yogi. So, most of the yoga books that I have seen, they all quote 6.47. They don't quote 6.47. Krishna does become a yogi. Now the yogi is greater than all the transcendents. Krishna is not saying the yogi is greater than a bhakta, but they are not told. Krishna is saying yogi is greatest. Why? Greater than a tapasvi, greater than a jnani. If you take this person as a sense, it's a very strong recommendation of yoga. Greater than a jnani, greater than a tapasvi, become a yogi. But what kind of yogi? I didn't describe the expert. Prabhupada writes in this purport. He writes, he's clarifying these three glorifications. Tapasvidhyo adhiko yogi. So that if you go to the bottom of the purport, asceticism without self-knowledge is imperfect. So tapasvi, somebody might be tapasvi, but if you don't have atma jnana, then his tapasya is simply an exercise for the body. It's what does Kulishekara Maharaj say? It is a weight reducing exercise. What is that? Amnayabhyan arindrasam vetasanyas medhas cheda phalani. Medhas cheda is fat. Cheda phalani. That is all that is. So asceticism without self-knowledge is imperfect. Then jnani bhyopya kobata. He says, empiric knowledge without surrender to Supreme Lord is also imperfect. This will be empiric knowledge comes perfect, right? Bahunam jnanam ante jnanvan mam prapadeti. Without that it is imperfect. And karmibhyas kobata. And fruitive work without Krishna consciousness is not just imperfect, it's a waste of time. Prabhupada says, Shrama eva hi kevalam. So there's no advancement towards spiritual path. Now Prabhupada therefore says, the most highly praised is not yoga, it's bhakti yoga. It is mentioned in the next one. So, yogi namapi sarvesha matratenam saratmanaha shaddhavan bhajate yomam.
So he
he is the highest of all. Basically, there also, at my opinion, came in 32. What is that? Atma upamiya sattva samaprasiddha arjuna. Sukham vayadiya dukham sayogi paramo mataha. My opinion. That same thread of thought is going on here. What is my opinion, Krishna is saying? Krishna's opinion is not just another person's opinion. He is the Supreme Lord. His opinion is the absolute truth. So, three characters Krishna is describing in this verse. Madgatein antaratmana. So what is he doing inside his heart? He is that not just meditating on himself or on the Paramatma, on me guys. Madgatein antaratmana. And then Shraddhavan, yes, think. And bhajate ma. So Prabhupada takes these words. First he takes the word bhajate. And then bhajate is not just worship, it is service. And this 11th canto Prabhupada this verse, which quote that if you don't worship the Supreme Lord, we don't do bhajan of the Supreme Lord. Na bhajanti avajananti sana drashta prasankyata. And we fall back. It's Prabhupada as an overall analysis of all the yoga processes. And then he says how, in the first time in this, Bhagavad Gita Prabhupada is describing the beauty of Krishna over here. So madgatena antaratmana, you have to do. Fix your mind on Krishna. How to do that? That is, this is the beauty of Krishna. We should meditate on this beauty. And it's beyond the Brahma-yoga. So interestingly he puts it, how it is, it's called Shyam-sundar, it's beautifully colored as a cloud, and goes on, whose body is tall garland, illuminating all sides is his gorgeous luster, is called the Brahma-yoga. So generally we don't juxtapose the personal beauty of Krishna with the Brahma-yoga. Prabhupada is bringing both of them together over here. And then, he's a perfect child, husband, friend, master, and then, finally, Prabhupada talks about so pure bhakti is quote going from the Kupal Tapani Upanishad. Now, here in Krishna completes Yoginam Sarvesham. This is Bhakta is the greatest devotee. Now, after this, he will address Arjuna's question. What Arjuna's question was that actually this quote is quoted very difficult. So, Krishna will describe an alternative process. What Arjuna said, yes, now you have to fix your mind on me, but Arjuna, I don't want to go to both his whole dangerous process of going to the jungle other, and meditating. It is another person's life you can fix your mind on. That is, next one. Mai asakta manapartha. I will start with 7 chapter. You have to fix your mind on me. For fixing the mind, your mind has to be attached. 22. And how do you get attached? That will be described in 7 chapter. So in that sense, Krishna tells, addresses Arjuna's objection and answers it by specifying a process. So the first time in the Bhagavad Gita, Bhakti will be explicitly talked about. And not only in Bhakti we talk about, Bhakti will be compared with other processes. Telling God worship and other impersonalist worship. And Bhakti will be shown to be very superior. Far superior to all these. Here, let's have a look at the overview that we did just now. So we discussed this today. Initially Krishna started by talking about the main obstacle on spiritual advancement for the yogi, that is the mind. There has to be some basic level of mind control before one can start practicing exclusive yoga. So when one is doing karma yoga and yoga, the initial angas of dhyana yoga, that is the aroha stage. And Aruna says one does not exclusive yoga. And in the exclusive Ashtanga Yoga process, Krishna describes how one gets attained to deeper and deeper realization. He starts from Sadhaka stage, goes up, talks about Madhamsa Madhigachati in this field. Then he starts again from Nasi Ashtanga process. You shouldn't eat too little or too much. And then again he goes to the stage of Pashyan Atmani Pushyati. That Atmani is actually the person, Jesus. And he says, derided in that. Then after that, again he starts with Sanishchayena Yoga Sangha, become fixed. He starts. Then he takes it as Yomam Pashyati Sarvatra. One who sees me everywhere and Atma Upamiya Sarvatra. One who sees all the beings as equal. Then he addresses Arjuna's question and then first anxiety about mind is very troublesome. And second anxiety that because of the mind's trouble, one may not even complete the process. And he describes how yogi, the Kalyana Krut, the transcendentalist, never makes him auspicious. And he uses the two standard ways in which he gets auspicious results. And then lastly, continuing the thread of thought of the topmost yogi, he describes how yogi is better than all the transcendentalists And among all the yogis, bhakti yogi is the best. So, now we have completed the first section of the Bhagavad Gita in our report. So, now our Shripad Mahaprabhu was suggesting that before we start the 7th chapter, we will do an overview of the 6 chapters quickly. And that will also benefit those devotees who have come today. That may take around 15 minutes. That we will do when we start the session in the afternoon. There is another suggestion by Swami Gaurangpur yesterday. He was suggesting that instead of reserving all the question answers for the end, can we have question answers after every section? So, yeah, so that's what I was calculating. That is the marker. Our countdown, what it is over here? Where is it? Stop on that. So, we have completed 279 verses. So how many are remaining? 421 verses are remaining in 32 hours. So we have to complete around 13 verses per hour. We have to complete, and we should be able to complete it. So, of course, the first 279 we were able to do fast because the first chapter is quite easy to go through. And the second chapter went a little fast. The remaining chapter was a little reasonable speed. So, that means we are well on track. And we can have at half an hour question answers if you want. Or we can just reserve the question answers for the end.
End
is better? Okay.
If your time
personally. A person is different. We can all, that personality is okay. But we are talking about such questions. What we could do otherwise? Mm-hmm. Now, whatever questions you have, you note it down and give it to me. Then I can decide. If you feel that the question should be answered now, you can give it to me now. And then we will discuss whether these questions are going to be answered in the flow itself. Because Krishna has not just ended Karma Yoga. We will talk about Karma Yoga again in the 18th chapter also, to some extent. So, we will be discussing something more at that time. In that sense, some questions might be addressed there also. So, let us start the next session with the overview of the 6 chapters, and then we'll move on to the 7th chapter. Should we be at 3 o'clock or 3:30?
It's
3 o'clock. Guru Puja is here, no? Or there? And then?
So, 3 o'clock
will be. Okay. Okay. श्रीमद् भगवद गीता की जय श्री प्रभुपाद की गौर भक्तवृंद की जय गौर श्री